Welcome back to the third hour of Issues Etc. We're broadcasting from Grace Lutheran Church in San Mateo, California. During this last hour, we're going to spend some of it with Pastor Craig D'Onofrio. He's a regular guest on the program. We're going to talk about the contemporary Christian music industry. And it is an industry. There's no doubt about that at all. In fact, we just had a conversation with Terry Mattingly last week. Do you remember this? We were talking with him about his book called Pop Goes Religion, Religion, Christianity, and Pop Culture. And I had mentioned that contemporary Christian music sold is selling out and making greater amounts of money as a business than it ever has before, and that it had made the covers of some of the weekly news magazines several years back. And he said, you know, the way they came up with those figures was by also counting groups that aren't with contemporary Christian labels, but who have Christian members in them. And I had not known that. So what is contemporary Christian music, and what about it as a business? We'll talk about that for 25 minutes here on Issues Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Even though we are here in San Mateo, California, we can still take your phone calls and your questions. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And it seems like our technical problem has been solved, and we'll be able to do some audio for you, some open lines audio, in the last 25 minutes of Issues Etc. Pastor Craig D'Onofrio is a regular guest. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Pasadena, California. And he is the former New Artist Review
reviewer
for Maranatha Music. Craig, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. It's good to be back.
Okay, what does it mean that you reviewed new artists for Maranatha? Tell us what your job was.
Well, my job was back in the 80s for Maranatha Music and MRC, which was then a subsidiary of Maranatha Music. When new artists would try to break into the scene, they'd send in their demo tapes. And I was the first line of defense that things would go through. And I don't know if you've been watching American Idol or any of these kinds of shows.
Yeah.
But all those dogs that you see, you know, that they roll out just so everyone can laugh at, they came by my desk first.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you got to be the Simon Cowell of Maranatha.
Pretty much. I had my form letters, you know, don't quit your day job. And the ones that are, oh, you're okay, you'll keep working at it. And then the other ones are, well, let's talk a little bit more.
Well, I remember the mid-80s, and I remember being a devotee of contemporary Christian music, which was just starting to kind of come out of gospel. It was just starting to actually have a different sound to it, maybe a really more contemporary sound at the time, and listen to it on the radio and going to concerts and whatnot. But in those days, contemporary Christian music was the Imperials. I don't know
right.
if you remember,
yeah,
kind of like
yeah,
the
yeah.
Alabama of, and they were beautiful, a quartet, I believe, or a quintet of singers.
Sure. Yeah, you had all those old bands like Love Song and Mustard Seed Faith from the early 70s, mm-hmm. and then you kind of segued into the 80s, and when I was working in the industry, people like Kelly Willard were really starting to hit it, you know, big, and she was a good friend of mine. Her husband was a dear friend also, and I was in a Christian punk band.
Punk.
And we were signed to MRC and then ended up on Exile Records on another Christian label back then, and that was kind of the emerging thing in Southern California back then, and really starting to reach out real rock and roll was coming into Christian music. And this is where you started to see the blurring of a distinction between worship and entertainment.
What do you mean by that?
Well, part of the problem is we weren't rock stars. We were ministers. And so, you know, we'd stand up on stage and we'd rock out and, you know, we had our crazy hair and earrings and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture contemporary Christian punk in my mind.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Okay.
And, well, there were bands like the Lifesavers, Undercover, and my band was Modern Mission. And anyway, so we'd be rocking out and then we, oh, praise Jesus, you know. And so we put on this real pious face on it and everything. And you see a lot of the same thing today where there's a heavy emphasis on entertainment that's come into the church and the blurring between entertainment and worship. I'm in a very liturgical congregation. We chant the liturgy, we sing the hymns, and my oldest brother says, you know, I like what you Lutherans say, but your music just doesn't grab me. And I say, oh, you can't dance to it? Is that the problem? Yeah, kind of, you know. So he resists the depth of our worship in preference of the entertainment value of church.
Okay, let's step back there for a second. I want to come back to that blurring of the distinction between entertainment and worship. But you said something there that struck my mind. It is the blurring of the distinction between artist, if you can say that of a punk band, okay?
Absolutely. I knew at least three chords.
Okay. You know. That's all you need. Artist and authority.
Right.
And I started to see it, of course, my days go back into the very late 70s and the early 80s, where perhaps, let's say, I'll go back to the Imperials, perhaps if you went to one of their concerts, if they were want to, you might get something of a sermon near the end of the concert, and then a come to Jesus kind of invitation that they would normally do. And it was a concert, there's no doubt about it. I paid to get in, okay? And I had an assigned seat.
Todd, did you pay to give your heart to Jesus?
No, I never did. The auditorium was too big. But then there were artists who made no pretensions about trying to do anything other than just perform. The early Amy Grant, she just got on the stage with her guitar and played. And when she was done, she walked off and she made no attempts to turn this into something other than artist performs enjoyable music. So how does one go from artist to authority, from celebrity to pastor?
Well, these are some of the big problems that have been faced in the past. When you have someone who is, say, a rock star like Bob Dylan, you remember when Bob Dylan became a Christian?
Oh, yeah.
You don't hear anything about it anymore. As soon as he converted, excuse me, they elevated him to the status of, you have a gift, you need a ministry. And so you have to get into a ministry right now. We are proclaiming you to be a minister because you're famous and you have a gift. We see this all the time. We see it in our own church. When someone big comes in from another denomination, you know, we see them march through the system as fast as possible into places of authority when they're new converts. And it's a problem. It's really a problem. The Bible tells us in 1 Timothy 3 that a pastor should not be a recent convert. And yet all of Christendom clamors around fame as though the famous guy is going to be a better pastor than the not famous guy. And, you know, look at Paul. Paul was a miserable failure. St. Paul, he stunk as a missionary. He started little churches, 10, 12 people. I mean, he didn't grow a mega church. He never had a Starbucks in the lounge or anything like that. But, you know, if Benny Hinn became a Lutheran, how fast would we be showing him on TV as our guy? Even though maybe he still believes that there's nine gods or something crazy like that.
How is it that Christians can see through, say, for instance, Bono of U2?
I love Bono.
Well, okay, but he opines and waxes authoritative on foreign policy and AIDS policy and this, and Christians look at that and say, he's got no business. He should shut up and sing. But when it comes to the artists in the contemporary Christian music scene, and they wax and opine about matters spiritual and they have no real theological training,
right?
They say, well, they can play a guitar. They obviously must have a ministry.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about. That's the problem is, if you're famous enough, then we're going to just plug you in as the big cheese. It doesn't matter if you know your theology or not. We are very deep theological church, and we have incredible doctrine, the riches of which I had no idea existed before I became a Lutheran. And to realize how simple and yet difficult our doctrine is all at the same time, it requires training. It requires something special.
You've got Calvary Chapel roots, right, Craig?
Praise the Lord.
Okay, I thought so. And I want to talk about kind of the export from the Calvary Chapel, the Vineyard, these kind of the early big churches, the ones that have done so much to shape the face of so many denominations across the United States today, but how the standard for their music became the standard for contemporary Christian music. It became kind of, let's watch what Calvary Chapel's doing and then let's go sell it on a CD or on an album.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think it can be really duplicated again, the kind of dynamic that was existing back then. I started going to Calvary Chapel in like 1973, I think it was. I was just a little kid. And the Jesus people were still all there. All the hippies were there. And they'd show up unwashed, wearing shorts, dirty ripped jeans, flip-flops, sometimes barefooted. And it was a place where they were accepted. Before that, we attended a very conservative Baptist church. And I remember one Sunday, my parents were just livid because they came out of church one day and they said there were a bunch of hippies in there, and the pastor marched them up, made them sit in the front pew, and just ridiculed them for a while. So Calvary Chapel was basically founded by Chuck Smith, who was a four-square pastor who accepted all these hippies into his church. Excuse me. And so they brought their music in. And a lot of these guys brought their pot in and their LSD in also. And so they're playing their music, singing and praising Jesus, and then going out in the van and smoking and, you know, doing all their stuff. So it was not known that they were doing that, but it was going on. It was kind of a very wild time. Looking back and finding out about this stuff was amazing to me.
Did you sense a point there at Calvary Chapel where Chuck Smith, who went very quickly from kind of community pastor to phenom, where he said, we're onto something here, the music of the Jesus people generation of that 1960s, 70s Jesus people generation is going to be the music of this church, is going to be the music of this movement?
You know, Chuck Smith still likes the hymns. He really does. He is not the largest advocate of the praise music, but he realized that this is the music of the people that were coming to his church. And so he pretty much had a very open policy toward adopting it. Part of the biggest problem, though, is there's no doctrinal review, because there are not really strong doctrines in those churches. I also attended the Vineyard for a couple of years, and I knew John Wimber, and I was very good friends with his son, Chris, who passed away also. He played in another band. And it was the same problem there. John Wimber was a cast off from Calvary Chapel. He was too radical for Calvary Chapel. And so they sent him, exiled him out, and he started the Vineyard movement. But it was very much a anything goes, Wild West kind of thing.
Our call in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're broadcasting live today, this Monday, February the 20th. From Grace Lutheran Church in San Mateo, California, wrapping up a very short trip out here to the West Coast. And we have the privilege of talking here during this hour with Pastor Craig D'Onofrio, who's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Pasadena, California, and former new artist reviewer for Maranatha Music. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. All right. Let's talk about the business. Now, when you were with Maranatha, it was certainly a business, but that was some time ago. Now it's big business.
Right.
And we have heard from Lori Lewis and others who have been in the contemporary Christian music scene.
By the way, Lori's mother just passed away. I'm going to be doing a memorial service on Sunday, so please keep her in your prayers.
We certainly will. Yeah. And she's been on our program before, talking about her life in both contemporary Christian music, but also in contemporary Christian radio. That was where most of her experience is. And she has talked to us about how this is business. What drives what makes it onto someone's album is not necessarily its Christian content, but its marketability. Talk about that, if you would.
At that time, Maranatha Music was actually a nonprofit, but they were still very much business-driven. You had to be very marketable to be able to get on with them. They wouldn't just take anyone if they didn't have a market for them. That's why they started MRC. MRC was their rock subsidiary, and so that's where all the rock and punk bands and new wave bands of the 80s ended up. It also fizzled and died. But nowadays, I know that most of the Christian labels are owned by secular companies, and so because of that, it's just business.
I mean, someone says, that's just a business necessity. In order to compete with the big names and the big marketing bucks that are out there, a Christian label's got to be owned by someone with very deep pockets in order just to do the thing. Is there more to it than that?
You know, one of the reasons that I went back to school, my bachelor's degree is business management, is that I saw a record company being run by musicians and not businessmen. And it was chaos. In those days, it was really a hybrid of the two. You had a few people, the accountant and so forth, that knew their business, but the rest of the people were just ex-musicians that are trying to figure things out. And the world has changed dramatically since then. It really has. Now it is run by the MBAs and all the rest like that.
Is the music of contemporary Christian music today, the music, you mentioned before that when Chuck Smith was doing his Calvary Chapel thing, the reason that he was welcoming of the hippie movement's music was because this was the music of the people who were coming to his church. It was their music. It was being performed out on the streets, not too far from here, Haight-Ashbury and all the other places. Is contemporary Christian music today the music of the people who are coming to church? Or has the river started to flow the other direction?
You know, some of my friends and I, we like to do what we call the world tour of churches. And on Sunday or Saturday evenings, we'll just pick a mega church somewhere, Saddleback or one of the other ones, and we'll go. Southern California is a very fruitful place for that. And some of the music really is contemporary. Some of it is really dated.
How cutting edge can these churches afford to be? Because I've got a 14-year-old daughter, so I hear exactly. And she likes the music that's truly alternative, that you can't buy the CD unless you buy it from the guy directly over the Internet. And I'm telling you, some of it would shock people, just in terms of the way the music's performed, not in terms of the content, but just the way the music's being performed. How cutting edge can the church really be?
Well, that's always been my contention also, is if you want to do real contemporary music that our kids are listening to, the 12 and 14-year-olds, it's going to be so loud and so obnoxious, you're not even going to understand the words. And it just will not work with worship, because it's just that kind of stuff that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And I'm a former punk, you know.
is the trend lately in music sales has been worship music, where consciously the marketing strategy seems to have been, whereas this used to be kind of music of the people. Yes, use it in your church if you like it. Now we're watching the church saying, here's what people seem to be responding to on Sunday morning in the big influential mega churches. Put it all on one CD and sell it to people, and they do buy.
Oh, yeah. You see those commercials on TV all the time. They're like infomercials for worship music. You know, you get the 3-CD set for $19.95 through Ronco or whoever it is. And it's a big seller. But I really believe that most of that is not driven either specifically by entertainment or specifically by worship. I think that it's a blending of the two. People say, I like the music, and some people say, I like the content, and it kind of goes both ways. And so people get to feel like, well, gosh, I can listen to music that I like, and it's glorifying to God, and, you know, I can get it all in one-stop shopping here.
It's safe.
There's no sense of vocation.
What do you mean?
It's okay to be an entertainer and a Christian at the same time. You don't have to be rolling out Jesus in all of your words and all of your lyrics. If you have a girlfriend or a wife, it's okay to sing songs about how much you love them. It's okay. God actually approves of us loving our wives. It's crazy, I know, but it happens. And so, you know, it's okay to be an artist and not draw all crucifixes. It's okay to, in living your life as a Christian, in the vocation that God has given you, if you simply do all that you can to the best of your abilities, and ultimately acknowledging that you have a gift from God here, you're living your vocation. You're living the life that God has given you to live. And just like the mother changing the diapers of the baby, she serves God just as much as I as a pastor does.
Craig, since Maranatha, at least in its nonprofit days, trusted you to vet talent, to be the gatekeeper, at least the first gatekeeper.
I don't know what they were smoking.
Letting people through.
That's crazy.
But I have to ask, given the fact that they were exercising good judgment, or assuming they were exercising good judgment and letting you do that, how do you assess contemporary Christian music? And, of course, this is a broad brush, but how do you assess it in terms of, is it good music? You know, sitting there as the person who says, My task here is to say, is this person talented, and is the music they perform good music?
You know, back then, we used to joke around about how the Christian artists were the people that couldn't make it in the real world. There were some who were very talented. People like Kelly Willard, she really had talent. There were truly talented artists, but the majority of the people on the Christian labels in the 80s were pretty inferior. I know my band was. There's no way we could have gotten a real record label to look at us. Nowadays, though, I find that a lot of the Christian bands out there are actually pretty talented people. And there really are some really, truly talented musicians out there doing Christian music.
So how would you assess it in kind of summary here, both your positive and your negative assessment of the contemporary Christian music industry in just about a minute here, Craig?
The positive is that there are many truly sincere people that truly want to serve the Lord. There truly are. There are also a lot of politicians involved, not secular politicians, but church politicians and label politicians, bureaucrats and whatnot. And frankly, a lot of the dealings that I experienced were much shadier than those of the world. But also, I made some truly magnificent friends who were very caring and wonderful people who love Jesus. But unfortunately, they didn't have a solid theological background. And most of these people that I knew back then are no longer in the church, unfortunately.
Theologically, as a pastor,
yeah.
How would you assess, again, kind of a general sweep, the contemporary Christian music industry? How would you assess it theologically? We've talked about, is it contemporary? Is it Christian?
I made a note before the show, or program, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a bumper sticker not too long ago that said, "Lord, deliver me from your disciples." And I laughed as I saw that because I understood. It is a business, and people are very much in the mind of corporate America. There is backstabbing that goes on. There is all sorts of stuff that goes on. But, you know, that happens inside of the church. That happens in various publishing houses. That happens, you know, all over the place. It's really amazing that the gospel does manage to seep out of these sometimes. And there are truly wonderful people who actually get the gospel who are doing this every now and then. And when I see that, I get really excited, and I think maybe there is hope for contemporary Christian music.
Pastor Craig D'Onofrio is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Pasadena, California. Craig, thanks for being our guest. Thanks for coming up.
Thanks,
I know quite a distance. He's a former New Artist Reviewer for Maranatha Music. When we come back from this break, we've got some audio open lines. Boy, I hope we got audio open lines, because otherwise I'm kind of hanging out in the wind. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We're broadcasting to you live today, this Monday. It's the 20th of February from Grace Lutheran Church in San Mateo, California. We'll be right back with open lines after this.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Christians today are reading the prophet Ezekiel in a rather odd way. They view this book as a roadmap for the end times, a chronology of what will happen when the nation of Israel is restored and the temple is rebuilt in Jerusalem. Is this what the prophet Ezekiel was really talking about? How can we find Christ in the book of Ezekiel? Our Issues Etc. book of the month for February is a commentary on Ezekiel, the first 20 chapters. It's authored by noted Old Testament scholar Dr. Horace Hummel. Order the Concordia commentary on Ezekiel by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy. Just visit our website, issuesetc.org, and there on the homepage, you'll find the Issues Etc. book of the month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Ezekiel, chapters 1 through 20. The book is $42.99 plus shipping and handling.
Intelligent design, an intelligent solution? Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Bible Upholding Ministry of Answers in Genesis. Well, Ken, with all the talk about intelligent design in the news these days, people want to know if it should be taught in public schools. What are your thoughts?
Well, Mark, because of the so-called separation of church and state issue in America's public schools, Christians have been looking for ways around it. For example, to allow students to hear the scientific problems with molecules to man evolution, which is wonderful, and to learn of different views of origins. So is teaching intelligent design really the way to accomplish this? Now, while we believe that design arguments can be useful for opening any discussion on origins, we don't recommend that science teachers be mandated to teach an alternative idea like ID. It can actually be counterproductive to require teachers, many of whom are evolutionists, to teach something they totally reject. As we predicted, recent efforts by a school board in Pennsylvania to require science teachers to make their students aware of ID failed in a federal court. The judge ruled it unconstitutional to require public school science teachers to refer to ID as an alternative to evolution. Now, we do believe that public school teachers should be allowed freedom of speech and should be guaranteed the freedom to present critiques of evolution and discuss alternatives.
On our website, AnswersRadio.com, we answer more of your questions regarding the battle over origins. Next time you're in front of your computer, go to AnswersRadio.com.
Dr. Peter Scare on how Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, is unique.
We take seriously the words of our Lord, you know, that we are to be called to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. We are faithful to the Scriptures, and we are faithful to word and sacrament. We are both evangelical and Catholic. We are evangelical in that we believe the Word of God to be true, that we believe the Bible, and we're not going to back down from it. At the same time, we're Catholic. We recognize that this church has been around for 2,000 years. We also recognize that God is continuing to work through means, that He's working through the water of baptism, He's working through the body and blood of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So we take seriously our mission to be a light and salt to the earth.
For more information on Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, go to their website, ctsfw.edu, or call them at 1-800-481-2155.
On Tuesday's Midday Living Jubilee, live at 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO. Join me, Diane Summers. We'll be talking with Dr. Bob Weiss about cloning and stem cell research and an upcoming seminar that's at Trinity Lutheran Church in Edwardsville in the very near future. And James Brower is our guest to talk about worship. It begins at 11:05, Living Jubilee on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. here in the last 25 minutes as we broadcast live from Grace Lutheran Church in San Mateo, California. A little bit of audio open lines for your questions and your comments. We're going to deal with a couple subjects. First of all, Christian Zionism. They're in Dallas. The national religious broadcasters are pledging their support to the state of Israel. They're a little concerned, as many are for other reasons. They're concerned that perhaps Hamas, having taken over the Palestinian Authority, is going to mean more trouble. We'll find out what they have to say. We'll play some of that audio, and I want your response to it as well. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines. That means you can call in. And, of course, during open lines, anything you want to talk about is also fair game. We can take those phone calls here as we broadcast live from Grace Lutheran Church in San Mateo, California. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is the Concordia Commentary on Ezekiel. It's the first 20 chapters. It's a compendious first part, or at least a first volume, to Horace Hummel's treatment of this Old Testament book that many people find very confusing, but it can be read and ought to be read in a Christ-centered, cross-focused way. That's what this commentary is all about. It's $42.99 plus shipping and handling. You can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and order the book, The Concordia Commentary on Ezekiel, the first 20 chapters, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Okay, this is how it works. I've got audio to play for you, and I want your reaction to it. Some big names, Kay Arthur and Janet Parshall, are down at the NRB convention, the National Religious Broadcasters, apparently being held in Dallas this year. We haven't been there for a couple of years. And the headline reads, Christian Zionists pledge their support. We recently did a program on Christian Zionism with someone who had written a book about it, and you may remember that conversation. Now, many members of the National Religious Broadcasters believe modern State of Israel is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy and, as such, should receive U.S. support. Here's Janice Parshall. She's board member of the National Religious Broadcasters, addressing Israel's tourism breakfast there at the National Religious Broadcasters. Parshall, after Hamas, the victory, she's there, and she says that Israel needs U.S. support now more than ever.
There are rumblings on Capitol Hill about whether or not, in light of these new elections and in light of what the future might be for Israel, whether or not the United States should pull its support. May God have mercy on us if we ever do that.
Now, you can hear here the sense of urgency that those who believe that the modern state of Israel is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy feel about the recent events in the state of Israel. What could this possibly mean? They were already burdened with the fact that the previous prime minister had been ceding land in the West Bank to the Palestinians. If you think that Israel is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, if you think that the modern state of Israel is equivalent to the Old Testament Israel, then you're going to see this as an event of literally biblical proportions, and you're going to be concerned. Janet Parshall is. Are you concerned about this? Do you think that this is overblown? And look, if Hamas is in charge of the Palestinian Authority, and this might cause further trouble, and it might mean more bloodshed, and the U.S. is put in a tricky position diplomatically. Well, Janet Parshall says, no, now is the time to support Israel more than any other time. Here's Kay Arthur. She is CEO of Precepts Ministries, addressing the Israel Tourism Breakfast. Arthur says that she's an American Christian, but Israel is her spiritual home.
If I was ever forced to choose between the United States of America or Israel, I would have to choose Israel.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, et cetera. We're hearing some of this audio from the National Religious Broadcasters, and among them, Janet Parshall and Kay Arthur, really kind of claiming a dual citizenship. I remember when one of the lawmakers from my home state, Texas, made some statements a couple of years ago. Cannot remember who it was, made some statements a couple years ago about the National State of Israel. And I remember hearing the statement thinking, it sounds like he is kind of advocating a dual citizenship for conservative Christians. While we have this loyalty to our home country, America, our real loyalty lies with the modern state of Israel. At least a dual loyalty here. And we just heard Kay Arthur says if she had to choose between America and Israel, she would be choosing Israel. Now, here's Kay Arthur again of Precepts Ministries addressing that tourism breakfast. She says that she believes that modern Israel is a fulfillment of biblical prophecies.
It is a privilege to speak to you as a very zealous Christian Zionist.
Okay. Self-identified as a Christian Zionist, do you identify yourself as a Christian Zionist? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you do, would you go so far as Kay Arthur has there when she says that for her, if the choice came down to America or Israel, she would have to choose Israel, and Israel is her spiritual home? It makes you wonder, since they're addressing the Tourism Board of Israel, it makes you wonder, what is in it for the Tourism Board? We're not too far from San Francisco, and San Francisco is a big tourist destination, isn't it? There's all sorts of things to do. And people there tend to think, well, okay, the best thing we can do for our city's economy is to keep the tourism coming in. Well, that's what the Tourism Board in Israel is all about, too. They want to keep people coming to Israel, spending their U.S. dollars. Now, their interests are not necessarily the interests of these Christian Zionists. They have financial interests. I don't fault them for that. But the Christian Zionists say, no, we're supporting you, and we're taking our trips over to Israel every year and our busloads of Christians coming over from the church, not because we want to support tourism, but because we believe we're visiting a literal fulfilled prophecy right here in our time. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Steve. He calls from his car. Steve's first. Welcome.
How's the warm weather?
It is warm out here, although everyone around here thinks it's cold.
Oh,
I think it's beautiful.
Okay. That's okay. I used to go out to San Francisco all the time for work. Their idea of cold is 50 degrees.
Yeah.
But I think, isn't it sad that someone thinks that their spiritual home is Israel as opposed to heaven?
Yes.
And the other part of it is, and this is my concern about Hamas, is what is Hamas going to do with the Palestinian Christians? What are they going to do since there's a fair percentage of Palestine are Christians? They're not Muslim. And since Hamas are Islamists, how are they going to, what's going to happen to our Christian brothers and sisters there? I mean, I think we should have more concern for that than we should have for the state of Israel.
Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate the call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What about the rest of you? Well, two issues there. First of all, I think we can take a pretty fair guess about how Christian Palestinians are going to fare under Hamas. Probably not any better than they did under the PLO, or at least the political arm of the PLO. Probably not much better, which is very bad. In fact, we had some audio some weeks back from a Christian Palestinian who said pretty soon there won't be any Christians in Bethlehem, one of the last holdouts for Christian Palestinians. He said they're just making it too hard on us, not only the Israelis, but also the Muslims, and there won't be any Christians there. I seem to remember, I don't know, maybe I'm just making this up, but I seem to remember a time during the Crusades when Christians thought it necessary to, for good or for ill, to retake those Christian territories that had only recently been taken by Muslims. And they did so because they believed that these were, Christians believed these were their places, the birthplace of Christ. I'm appalled at the degree to which evangelical Christians in America turned a blind eye to the mistreatment of Christian Palestinians. Christians who are Palestinians who are being driven out of these traditional Christian holy sites. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I've got to wonder, in what sense for K. Arthur of Precepts Ministries is Israel her spiritual home? What makes the modern state of Israel her spiritual home? When she goes there, does she feel more spiritual? Does she feel like this is where God is as opposed to where she's at now? Would you call yourself a Christian Zionist, and would you say that Israel is your spiritual home? Here's Kay Arthur again, CEO of Precepts Ministries. She says that the Bible predicts that the Jewish people will convert to Christianity and in time worship Jesus.
Someday, all Israel will be saved when the Redeemer comes from Zion, when he makes an everlasting light there.
Now, you'll notice where she's picking this up. We can't fault her for this. She's picking this up on a reading of St. Paul's words in the book of Romans, where he says, and thus all Israel will be saved. And many dispensational and Zionist Christians do take this as a prediction of an en masse conversion of Jews worldwide to Christianity. And Paul is very concerned that his Jewish brethren be saved. And it's in that context, talking about how they must be saved, not because they're Israelites and not because they're children of Abraham, but because, in fact, they are of the faith of Abraham. This is how they're saved, that he says, and thus all Israel will be saved. His emphasis is not so much there on some mass conversion, but on the manner in which the Old Testament people of God and their descendants, the descendants of Abraham, according to the flesh, as Paul would have called them, will be saved, not in a different way than Christians, but in fact in the same way as Christians, by hearing and believing in their Messiah, Jesus. Now, there are many people who think there's going to be some sort of a mass conversion. That's fine and good. But up to this point, the modern state of Israel is not even Jewish, much less Christian. Not at least according to what the people believe there. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Dave calls from his car. Dave, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing
very
well.
Very interesting topic here. You know, I think that one of the things about, when you mentioned Christians who are Palestinian and also who live in Bethlehem, and how it seems like they're kind of persecuted more or less from both sides, Muslim or Israeli people. Mm-hmm. I think as far as the perception goes with the United States, Christians, I think that it has to do with our perception that we get from the media and so forth. And every time we see Palestinians, they're mostly Muslims. Mostly all Arabs are Muslim. And they celebrate the hijackers of 9/11 and everything like that, you know, and even throughout the world, they celebrate them every year. So we see them and we kind of attach all Palestinians to that because there is no voice of a Christian Palestinian. I've never seen one, have you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've read some books. Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate the call. I've read some books that are kind of advocacy for Christian Palestinians, saying let's not forget them in the mix. Now, admittedly, we're talking about a pretty small group of people, relatively speaking, relative to the Muslim population in Israel. But you're very right, Dave. They are getting it from both sides. They're getting it from the Israelis, who have no real... If you look at Israeli law, the modern state of Israel that's supposed to be this fulfillment of biblical prophecy, if you look at their law, if you are a Christian living there, Palestinian or not, if you are a Christian there, you, evangelical Christian, just pick up, take your work visa, go over there, move over there, and try to witness on the streets. You will be arrested. It's illegal for a Christian to witness publicly. Now, you can preach in your church. No problem with that. But if you make an attempt to proselytize anyone publicly outside your church, it's illegal. Another little detail glossed over by Christian evangelicals. Look, I mean, we could blame the press for this, but I don't think so, Dave. I think the press is reporting what bleeds leads. And so why do we see so many Muslim Palestinians? They're the ones out in the streets. Not all of them, but many of them. They're the ones in the streets. Where are the Christian Palestinians? Cowering in the corner, running away from their churches. But you will remember a couple years ago, to come back to Bethlehem, there was actually a siege of sorts of the church in Bethlehem of the Nativity. And there were Christian Palestinians hiding out there, seeking sanctuary. They were trying to remain safe. And eventually, they were dragged out. So it's not pleasant to be a Christian there in Israel, even if you aren't a Palestinian. Let's talk with Matt, who calls from Palm Bay, Florida. Matt, welcome.
Hi, Todd. How you guys doing out there in sunny California?
We're doing great.
I hope you're doing great. We're in not so great Florida, where it's supposed to be the Sunshine State, but it isn't. Down there in Texas, are they talking about two different ways of salvation for Jews, or for, you know, one for Christians and one for Jews? Are they talking dispensationalist? Is that what it sounds like?
Well, I do not know about either Janet Parshall or Kay Arthur about whether they would classify themselves as dispensationalists. They might or they might not. One thing I've discovered in looking into this is, by and large, when you find someone who would call themselves a Christian Zionist, they are operating from a dispensational reading of Scripture, and from the kind of that whole end time scenario where 1948 becomes a significant date in biblical prophecy because it is the establishment of the modern state of Israel. But not every Christian Zionist is dispensational. Some of them are just not that sophisticated in their theology. In fact, I would probably venture a guess that a vast majority of people who are kind of reading the Left Behind series of books do not delve into the theology of it at all. They just say, sounds good to me, if I'm a Christian.
That's exactly what they do. They say that it sounds really good. It does sound good, but a lot of things sound good. Like, one of the things that comes to my mind is, what did they really know about what theocratic Israel was, as opposed to what the state of Israel is today? I mean...
Well, the two are two very different things completely. Matt, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening down there in Palm Bay, as usual. Okay, I got one more piece to play here from Kay Arthur to round this off, and I want to hear from you. Do you consider yourself a Christian Zionist? Do you think the Christians in Palestine, that is the Palestinian Christians, are getting the short end of this deal? They're the ones whose concerns are not being addressed. And do you agree with someone like Kay Arthur who says, look, your first loyalty, or at least when push comes to shove, is going to be to Israel rather than your own country. Do Christians owe some sort of dual allegiance, wherever you live, dual allegiance, at least half of their allegiance to the modern state of Israel? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's Kay Arthur again, one more cut from her as she speaks at the National Religious Broadcasters in Dallas addressing the Israel's tourism breakfast. She says that Christians should visit Israel before Jesus comes back.
Go home and get there early and see what it's going to be like when Jesus and the Messiah is the King of all the earth.
So Jesus is now a tourist destination. I mean, I wonder what it's going to be like after Jesus returns and, according to dispensational theology, establishes his thousand-year reign. Will she become the head of the tourism board for Israel? Christians! Well, you know, remember this one that used to be on television all the time, Come Back to Jamaica? Or maybe it was Go Back to Jamaica? Where people who have been there, the Jamaican government was trying to get people to come back to Jamaica, and they're showing these beautiful swaying palms and the coconuts and the beautiful women and all that kind of stuff. Just come back to Jamaica. And we see it all the time. We see ads for this on television. In fact, Israel has a few of these as well. But Israel has an audience that's ready-made in these dispensational Zionist Christians to come and spend their tourism dollars there. I wonder, I mean, what is the picture? According to kind of the Hal Lindsey, Jerry Jenkins left behind scenario. Is it once Jesus has established his thousand-year millennial reign, reigning there on a throne in a rebuilt temple of Jerusalem, whether he will become a tourist destination where you can go, pay $5, walk inside and get to, as you walk through past the velvet rope, get to see a glimpse of the Messiah reigning there in Jerusalem. And remember, it's only for 1,000 years, so you might miss it if you don't book your destination now. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, whether it is rooted in dispensationalism or whether it is simply someone having read the Left Behind series of books and says, oh, that sounds reasonable. I mean, all the math works out, 1948, maybe it really is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. Christian Zionism is wrong in two ways. One, biblically, and the other just in terms of kind of the left-hand kingdom common sense. I'll deal with the second one first because it's the less important of the two. What we really ought to be asking as Americans is not, do we enjoy the blessings of providence or of God because somehow we've been a friend to Israel? We should be asking kind of a more bare-knuckled question, which is Israel good for America? So far, Christians have been saying, is America good for Israel? And I have heard the preachers on the radio and the television say, if we don't support Israel, if we withdraw one penny of, then we can expect God to diminish the blessings that he has been showering down upon this country for all of its 200 some odd years. I think that's a very unwise way to make public policy and to choose your allies. But the more important problem here is not so much whether or not this is good public policy or geopolitics. I just don't think it is. I think we need to reassess how good of an ally Israel is to us. The more important one is what is the root of this and how Christians are being taught to read their Bibles. Christians like me, who believe that Jesus is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, who believe that the person and work of Jesus is the sum and substance of all Old Testament prophecy and whatsoever the promises that have been made. Anyone who is listening yesterday to the epistle lesson, St. Paul says, whatever promises God has made, whenever, wherever, all these promises are yes in Jesus Christ. Paul is telling us that Jesus is the sum and substance of biblical prophecy. He is the key to understanding it, and he is ultimately the fulfillment of every promise and every prophecy that's ever been made. If you want to know how God fulfilled the Old Testament prophets and all of their promises and predictions, you need look no farther than the crucified and risen Jesus. To take anything or anyone and substitute them or it for Jesus is to profoundly misunderstand Scripture and miss the point. I mean, could it be that there are Christians in churches all over the country on Sunday morning sitting in Bible class, studying end times prophecy, keying and marking everything to the establishment of the modern state of Israel, then going into church and hearing a sermon about who the Antichrist is, but not who the Christ is? Could it be that they're missing the point entirely? I think not only could it be, it is. Jesus is the sum and substance of prophecy. And if you don't believe me, then believe Jesus himself. The evening after he was raised from the dead, he met his two disciples there on the road to Emmaus. They did not know who he was. And they asked him, well, where have you been? Under a rock? Didn't you know what's happened here in Jerusalem over the course of the last few days? And he says, well, tell me what's happened. And they said, well, this one that we thought would redeem Israel, that we thought would reestablish the kingdom of David and bring Israel to its former glory, was crucified. And now it's 3 days since this has happened. And what does Jesus say? I really wish that the Christian Zionists and dispensationalists would listen again to what Jesus says. Oh, foolish men, slow to believe everything that the prophets have said. And starting with Moses and all the prophets and all of the Old Testament, he ran them through in a crash course on how it was necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and thus enter his glory. He taught them right then and there, and they never forgot it, that he, his person and his work, his death and his resurrection, is the sum and substance of all those promises. That if you want to see these prophecies fulfilled, don't look to 1948, look to 30 AD and that man who is God hanging dead on a cross for sinners. And if you read the Bible for something other than him at the center, you are missing the point. That's the real tragedy. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. What part of that is not clear? LCMS World Relief underwrites issues, etc. Their concern is for both body and soul worldwide. They understand that Christ's favor and his care for people is not based upon who your grandfather is or who your great-great-grandfather is, but in fact upon Jesus' love for you shown there at the cross and the resurrection. They bring that message and that care to people worldwide. You can find out more about them at our website, issuesetc.org. Or you can call and donate to LCMS World Relief. Their toll-free number, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. A special thanks to Grace Lutheran Church here in San Mateo for hosting the second day of our whirlwind tour out here to the Bay Area. A special thanks also to the Lutheran Church of Our Savior in Cupertino for their hosting of our Sunday night nationally syndicated program, and to Pastor Vestal. To everyone who came out here today, thank you very much for being here today for our broadcast. To Jeff as well, and to Craig back in the studio, thank you. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.